All right. All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Julie Fedorchak, Chairman of the Public Service Commission. We are gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for a regularly scheduled commission meeting on today, Wednesday, May 13th. I want to call this commission meeting to order. Okay, we have one of our commissioners, Brian Kalk, on the phone with us, which gives me the opportunity to spread my papers all over the counter. So, Brian, your space is... Consider it invaded.
Just keep your signature off my signing block, okay?
I'm still working on that. Okay. We have had a really interesting couple of weeks since the legislature concluded their work. Last week we had an ADP request from NSP for a solar project that's really being driven by the new Minnesota solar mandate. Had a pretty lengthy hearing on that last week. We had the Heimdall rail accident last week as well. It kind of happened the same day as our hearing. And so myself and Daryl Nitschke went out and took a peek at that site last week, sort of after the dust settled, and had some good discussions with the FRA, DOT officials, some of the folks from D.C. were out even, and really helped refine some of our plans for our state inspection and underscored the value, really, of us getting engaged on that in North Dakota and helping to put some more eyes and on the boots on the ground to detect those kinds of problems ahead of time. They were also encouraged, and I think we all should be, the way that despite the fact that we all hate to see these accidents, and you know, you always run the risk of having some serious public safety issues and harming people and property when you have a crude rail accident. But despite that fact and acknowledging that, they were encouraged by the way the new safety measures have worked in this instance. The lack of an explosion was significantly different than other crude accidents we're seeing, and which suggests that the conditioning is having an impact. The cars performed better than they have in the past, even though they are the older version cars, which suggests that the increases or the improvements to the cars that are forthcoming will be even better. And so I think that, you know, that combined with additional safety inspections to help reduce the risk of the trains coming off the tracks, I think that all of these measures combined really are leading to the day where crude by rail transportation is safer and less significant public safety concern. So I'm encouraged by that. And then a couple days ago, we had a meeting with the health department, ongoing discussions with them about the 111D rules, potential rules, and what their role will be in the state's response and how that interacts with our role, and just having a good working relationship with the health department moving forward, I think bodes well for North Dakota as a state in how we will approach these new pretty far-reaching environmental rules by the EPA. So that sort of concludes my opening comments. I'll kick it over to Commissioner Chrisman for his thoughts this morning before we get started on our agenda.
I wish I had had a little more time to prepare something and have all the statistics. I was not surprised, because I'm kind of used to this since it's close to my original farm home, but I was so impressed again yesterday with Basin Electric's Dakota Gasification Plant. They had kind of a public information morning out there, And I don't have the statistics to quote and such, but one of the big things that's going on there now, and this gets to more of a point for our state and nation, actually, but one of the big things that's going on is that they're starting, you know, doing footings and things such as that for their big urea plant. And for those who aren't familiar in our area of the state, you know, most of the farm fertilizers that for getting nitrogen in the ground is either the anhydrous ammonia in the tanks or urea is the dry alternative. And the plant they're building is going to employ 500 to 700 workers for about a year. Building it is a big deal. They're hoping to be really, having a lot of those, although construction has started on footings and such, the big activity will start toward late summer or fall here. They're hoping to have that up and in production by the fall of 2016 so they can be producing urea for farmers to use in the spring of 2017. The reason I bring this all up is not just because we're going to have a better source of urea for the farmers, although that is important. What I think is so amazing is, you know, that plant was built as a way to solve a natural gas shortage and find out whether we could, in fact, on a commercial scale, produce natural gas from our abundant coal reserves. Well, it turned out that we could. It was a little on the expensive side, but we could do it. Well, in order to keep the plant going, rather than the federal government coming in with all kind of mandates on them, some time was just allowed, and the plant has evolved from once being almost exclusively a natural gas plant to where now their revenues from natural gas is really a very small part of what they do out there. And one of the exciting examples of it is the fact that they produce CO2 to sell for enhanced oil recovery up to Canada. And so even a big part of our country considers this big problem, this big pollutant that needs all kind of mandates to eliminate, there, it is a valuable resource that they produce and sell. And so given time, you know, technology and potential profits do so much to solve our problems. So I really think so many things, if we just don't have the government step in the way, they will resolve themselves. It's a wonderful example to have in front of us, and I love to tell the story about all the things they've done out there, from farm fertilizers to, like I say, the CO2 to just literally dozens of other products that they make out there out of our abundant coal reserves.
It almost seems endless, the opportunities for the energy resources in the state for development and how many spin-off projects you can have.
It is. It's exciting times.
How is urea shipped?
Trucks.
Okay. It's not rail?
Well, I'm sure in the large volumes, yes, I'm sure it will be railed, yeah.
Okay.
Very safely. No, I don't think there's any explosion problems.
Oh, good. I wanted to add one more thing about the Heimdall incident. One of the comments that the FRA made was it was the largest number of first responders that they've seen after an accident on crude by rail, and they were speaking nationwide. And so I think that the other area where we've really seen effective training and mobilization is on the first responders and the folks. In this case, a lot of them volunteers. So I think, we got to get a shout out to those people, too, for giving their time and devoting it to training and knowing how to respond to this sort of an accident in their rural areas. Okay, Commissioner Kalk,
Thank
tell
you,
us
Madam
where
Chair.
You are and why. It's kind of exciting.
Well, first off, I just wanted to also add it, and you talked about all the things that the commission had done. I just wanted to remind folks that you and I participated in the Enbridge's rapid response drill with the simulated pipeline leak west of Towner. I thought the Enbridge did a very nice job of setting that all up with the command center at the office there, the hotel in Minot, you know, the airboats, the helicopters. So it's good to see that not only can we actually execute when needed, but also they're always planning. So I thought that was a very good drill that you and I attended. Mm-hmm. And then to your first question, last Friday I was contacted by Senator Murkowski, the chair of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, and asked if I'd come out to testify in front of her committee about a slew of energy bills that are in front of the Senate right now. So basically came out here last night, do this phone call now, and then keep working this afternoon with the different members about my testimony and the thoughts that I'm going to share. The, I found out just a minute ago the other committee members that will be testifying are a member of American Natural Gas, a member from Berkshire Hathaway, a Center for American Progress, also the International Brotherhood of Electric Workers, AFL-CIO, is testifying, and I'll be representing the viewpoint of state commissioners. So I'll send my official testimony back to the office here. I just filed it. But basically, my viewpoint is to give the viewpoint of state regulators as the Senate considers a whole pile of these energy bills. And there's some that mandate more renewables. There's some that change jurisdiction on transmission. There's some that make it easier to do certain things. So there's a lot of different bills being considered. And one thing that I picked up quickly, this is kind of like North Dakota, where you get a bunch of bills that are submitted, and you can kind of see what some will fall away and some will move on. I do appreciate staff's help in getting up to speed and getting all this stuff put together, and look forward to getting back on Thursday after the hearing.
Good. Thank you for making it work in your schedule to do that, Commissioner Kalk. It's a great, great thing to have you voicing the perspective of North Dakota out there. Okay, one last thing I forgot about mentioning. It's been such a flurry of things the last couple of weeks that I kind of lost track of this one, but last week also saw the dedication of the new CapEx line that serves from just outside of Fargo to Minneapolis, a new big 345 kV transmission line. I was on hand for that dedication. It was a great day, sunny, no wind, and we were able to be right out there by a substation to mark the completion of that really important new infrastructure to not only improve reliability for XL customers in the Red River Valley, but also to provide a good export platform for North Dakota's continued generation and export of electricity, which is another one of our valuable commodities that we need to be able to transport to markets. And there's a lot of folks out east that appreciate that. So that's a great project completed and recognized on the same day that Dakota Prairie Refining in Dickinson was also dedicated, another major new energy project in North Dakota. Those two projects really are an example of how folks in this part of the country are showing the rest of the country how you can develop energy resources in a safe, environmentally friendly way to serve the public responsibly. And I'm glad that Commissioner Kalk is out bringing that same message to the leaders in Washington as they try to develop some sort of energy policy for our country that will serve the citizens the way they deserve to be served for the coming years. So with that, let's kick off our agenda with the consent items. We have a number of items on consent, and I would move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion is approved.
Okay. We have a fairly extensive regular agenda. I've got two items, starting with case number PU-14-769. I move the commission adopt the order adopting the hearing officer's May 13th, 2015, recommended findings of fact, conclusions of law, and recommended order in Meadowlark Midstream Company, Epping Transmission, Little Muddy Creek Pipeline, and Epping Station Project, citing application case number PU-14-769.
Second.
Okay, on November 3rd, Meadowlark Midstream filed and Epping Transmission Company filed an application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for a proposed 14-mile, 10-inch diameter crude oil pipeline and associated facilities in Williams County. We, on January 21st, found this application complete and established a hearing for March 18th that was designated an administrative law judge to serve as a substantive ALJ for that hearing. That hearing was held on March 18th. We designated a substantive ALJ because it was during legislative session, and we weren't sure what our schedule would be like on that day that might require us to be here. So we wanted to be safe, move the project forward, not delay things for the company. So we had a substantive ALJ. As it turned out, I was able to attend that hearing and did so, but we still had the substantive ALJ do the proceeding. The proposed facility is 14 miles, 10-inch pipeline. Ten of those miles were previously constructed, 4 miles of new construction, and as well as a new 20,000-barrel tank. No, an existing 20,000-barrel tank. This project will have the maximum the capacity of 100,000 barrels per day, but the company expects it'll ship between 15,000 and 30,000 barrels per day. There is an existing 20,000 barrel tank there. They will be constructing another 55,000 barrel tank on that site. The total project cost is $18 million. There were a number of agencies contacted by Meadowlark to get their input and feedback. No agencies expressed concern for the project. The SHPO concurred with a no significant sites determination for the project. There are no exclusion areas impacted by the project. And there are no residences within 500 feet of the project, although they did get a waiver from a residence that is 700 feet from the project just to be safe. Meadowlark has personnel available in the area to respond to any questions 20 or concerns 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They have shutdown valves on the pipe to that they can use in the case of any leak or anything that would necessitate the shutting down of the system. And they have emergency response plans and all the necessary plans in place. Let's see here. Let's see. I wanted to mention, let's see, I don't see that in here. Okay, I think those are the highlights of our order, and so I'm with passage of this order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Did you mention some of the small changes to the certification that we've normally done?
I did not.
I think it's rather important. They're not huge issues, but just recognizing, I think, certainly the will of the legislature, as well as our taking the time to kind of update the information that we feel we need in order to adequately be doing our jobs, but without putting an unnecessary burden. Like, for example, I think, you know, we had determined that the monthly reports in many of these cases would certainly be adequate rather than the weekly, where there's hardly any change having occurred. Mm-hmm. But weekly had just been the word that had always been used for a long time. And so, you know, I think it's another example of this commission making sure that we do follow through and do the things we're responsible for and need to do, but always being cautious not to place an unnecessary burden on these projects. Mm-hmm. And so that's been updated, and now this and some of the subsequent ones, the orders will be done a little bit differently unless there is a special reason why we need to revert back to the old language.
Yep. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion is approved.
Okay. Ooh, there's the revised one. Okay. Oh, man. I'm sorry. You know what? We're going to have to come back to mine because there were some last-minute changes. Oh, here we go. Sorry, I thought I was missing an order, but I've got it. Okay. Second item, I move the commission deem complete the applications for certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit, and further move the commission issue a notice of filings and notice of hearing in Metalark Midstream Company, LLC, 10-inch crude oil pipeline, divide to Burke County, citing application case number PU-14-823.
Second.
No. This isn't it.
Yeah.
I'm missing my JF2.
Okay. I withdraw my
second.
Do you have it?
You know what? I have notes on mine, though, so I'm going to have to pass it to you, Randy, and then we'll come back to my JF2 after I figure out where it got tucked in this pile of items.
Okay, I will withdraw my second.
Okay, can we do that, Daryl?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so
we're going to we'll go through yours, and then we'll come back to mine before we go, Brian.
Okay, very good. RC1, I move the commission submit the 2016 administration and enforcement grant application to the Office of Surface Mining to request federal funds that are needed to carry out the coal regulatory program for the next grant year period that begins July 1st of this year and ends June 30th of 2016.
Second.
In February, the Office of Surface Mining announced the allocation of federal funds for the federal share of state coal regulatory programs. We were allocated $909,580 for the next fiscal year. The total amount of the grant application, including the state share, is just over $1.42 million. This would include both the direct and indirect costs. And of this total, the federal share is, as I said, a little over $909,000. And that's the full amount allocated by OSM. And the state share is just over $511,000. The federal-state funding split will be 64% federal and 36% state based on OSM's federal lands funding formula. This formula considers the federal coal acreage in existing permits and applications that will permit new acreage. An estimated indirect cost rate of 29% is used in the grant application.
Here we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion is approved.
RC2, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-15-182, granting the request of the Andersons Incorporated of Maumee, Ohio, to operate as a roving grain buyer in North Dakota.
Second.
First of all, I'll say that the Andersons Incorporated has been doing business in North Dakota for some years, buying like potatoes that they did not need to be licensed for. And so I am not aware of any relation between the Andersons Incorporated and other businesses that might have had problems here in our grain licensing department with a similar name. So I don't think there's any connection here, at least not that I can find. The Andersons Incorporated projected their annual grain purchase volume in North Dakota will be 130,000 bushels. Their required minimum bond for a projected annual grain purchase totaling 130,000 bushels is $65,000. This applicant filed a $70,000 surety bond. They informed commission staff that a North Dakota producer approached them about buying oats. Approximately 95,000 bushels of oats were purchased and shipped, and the producer was paid in full. And the Andersons Incorporated informed staff that it was applying for a roving grain buyer license so it can contact the producer to do more business with him. Statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends that a roving grain buyer license be issued. Now, as I mentioned, they already made a purchase, and it wasn't that there was a problem with the purchase or a complaint from the producer, nor that we had even found this in our routine inspections. The fact of the matter is they noticed it and sent a letter and pointed out that their new compliance officer had discovered that they had made a purchase in North Dakota last year without a license, apologized for that mistake. And as I said, they were here buying potatoes for which they didn't need a license. And a potato producer approached them about finding a market for this oats that he had. And their buyer up here didn't realize that that was a whole different kind of situation that required a license. And they made the deal and carried it out. Like I said, they discovered it. I see no reason to pursue any legal cases with them or anything. I think they seem to be a legitimate dealer who has, as I said, met all the statutory compliance and is seeking to be licensed, and I think it is one that we should approve.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And my final motion is RC3. I move the commission acknowledge its May 11th issuance of a notice of informal conference in case number RC-14-846. The application for revision number 1 to surface coal mining permit NACC-1302 held by the Coyote Creek Mining Company, LLC.
Second.
This application for revision came in later than the original application for the mine permit because they didn't have the leases all done at the same time. So if you recall, there was no request for an informal hearing in the original permit application. And when this came in, then around that time, that request for what then was a formal hearing, because we had already issued the permit, came about. But this had not been deemed complete, so it couldn't be included in that. And so now, you know, that whole process with the original permit has happened. Now this was deemed complete, and the notice was put out. And there were actually two requests from Dakota Resource Council and Mr. Casey Voigt for an informal conference. There's that short time period to grant that. And so that's been set for June 2nd with ALJ. To go ahead and carry out that informal conference.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And that concludes my portfolio.
All right. We'll just pop back to JF2 before we proceed with yours, Commissioner Kalk. Never did find my version, but I'm borrowing Daryl's. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Meadowlark Midstream Company, LLC, 10-inch crude oil pipeline, divide in Burke County, citing application case number PU-14-823.
Second.
This is a second project by this company, Meadowlark Midstream, which we just had the shorter line. This project consists of approximately 46 miles of 10-inch crude oil pipeline to be known as a Stampede Pipeline and associated facilities located in Divide and Burke Counties, North Dakota. The project originates at Meadowlark's existing Divide pump station in Divide County and terminates at the Basin Transload and Global Partners Basin Transload facility in Burke County. It effectively displaces the trucking of the all the crude to feed that Basin Transload rail facility. The above-ground facilities will include a 400-barrel pressure relief tank at the Basin Transload Rail Facility, pig launchers and receivers, and block valves. The project will be designed, constructed, and operated and maintained in compliance with the Code of Federal Regulations, Title 49, Part 195, Hazardous Liquids Pipeline Safety Regulations, Subparts C, D, and F. The maximum operating pressure of the project will be 1,480 pounds per square inch. The maximum design flow rate will be 50,000 barrels per day, and the cost is approximately $33 million. A Meadowlark conducted a Class 1 cultural resources literature search on the study area and a Class 3 field inventory on the survey area. They contacted a number of agencies, including the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, North Dakota Game and Fish, North Dakota Parks and Rec, North Dakota Department of Trust Lands, the Abandoned Mine Lands Division of the North Dakota PSC, the State Historic Preservation Office, and the North Dakota Department of Health. A number of those agencies responded back with specific ideas for them for mitigation, which they are following. The NDPSC recommended that Meadowlark conduct geotechnical testing along the route in areas formerly mined for coal. As recommended by the PSC, Meadowlark performed a geotechnical study along the portion of the route that crosses a reclaimed surface mining area. The study indicated no concerns for construction of the pipeline through the reclaimed areas. Let's see. There are no exclusion areas, no other exclusion areas aside from one segment of a railroad that the pipeline will cross, and they will be boring underneath the Canadian Pacific Railroad and have received permission from them to do that. No other exclusion areas will be impacted. There are areas within 500 feet of a residence, school, or place of business are avoidance areas. There are 8 inhabited rural residences within 500 feet of the proposed route, and Meadowlark has obtained written waivers from the owners of all 8 inhabited rural residences. There are no other avoidance areas impacted by the project. Let's see here. Measures to minimize impact. Meadowlark testified that a supervisory control and data acquisition system will be installed as part of the project. Operations will be monitored by a control center in Woodlands, Texas, 24 hours per day, 7 days a week. They also have an existing emergency response plan, which applies to this project. That will also provide emergency response personnel 24/7 to respond to any potential leaks or reasons for intervention. Meadowlark testified that 12 wetlands along the route are currently subject to conservation easements and will be bored or avoided so as not to jeopardize those easements. Just sort of in summary, this company was the subject of some concern up in the Crosby area, which is where we had the hearing, because they were involved in the brine, in the line that had the brine leak at some point this winter. We had extensive conversations with the company during the hearing, both of these hearings, about how they will detect leaks in these lines and how they will respond to them. The Crosby hearing, there was a number of public members there. It was one of the probably most crowded public hearings on a pipeline that I've experienced other than the really large pipelines like the Enbridge pipeline. But there was a lot of public interest, and I think generally after the company laid out its plans, there were no members of the public that expressed concerns about the leaking or potential leaks and environmental hazards that would result of that after the company went through their plans. They talked a lot about the differences in detecting a leak in a transmission line, which doesn't have a lot of different on-ramps, versus a gathering line, which does. It's much easier to detect a leak in a transmission line because you don't have a lot of different sources coming and going, so you know exactly how much oil or material is on the system at any one time, and it's easier to detect if that number is off. So they went through extensively their emergency response plans and their leak detection measures. I was quite comfortable with the company's plans. The public who attended the hearing also seemed quite comfortable with the company's plans in that regard, and actually had a lot more input on reclamation issues than anything else. So the company has also agreed to a number of reclamation issues that we include in our orders, and they are accountable for living up to those commitments by the conditions of the order. So with that, I am comfortable with this project and think that it's another important piece of infrastructure to serve western North Dakota and get trucks off the road and provide a long-term safe way to transport this crude oil in our state.
And we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, Commissioner Kalk, that concludes my my portfolio. We'll kick it over to you.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. Before I forget, I authorized John Hamry to sign the orders in my absence. And I also, too, that in my testimony, I want you all to know that I included the importance of call before you dig. So now we're outside of North Dakota, a national flavor. Okay, item BK1. I move the commission adopt the consent order and Public Service Commission Robert Gibbons Sons, Inc., Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number GS13-613.
Second.
Robert Gibbons Sons is a North Dakota business corporation with offices in Fargo. Senex Pipelines, LLC, is a limited liability company with offices in Inner Grove Heights, Minnesota. In July of 2013, the commission received a third-party damage complaint from Michelle Slider. She's a DOT compliance coordinator for Senex. The complaint alleged a violation of Gibbons Sons, that they violated North Dakota one-call law. Our commission advisory staff conducted an investigation and communicated with all the parties involved. Based on the investigation, our crack staff concluded that on July 9, 2013, Gibb began an excavation as defined under North Dakota Century Code to install a water line at 25th Street and 139th Avenue near the city of Arnegard. Basically, staff also researched, and Gibb did not provide an excavation notice as required by state law at least 48 hours before the excavation. Staff concluded that damage to an 8-inch refined fuels interstate pipeline occurred at the location identified in the complaint. The estimated amount of damages is between $533,000 and $613,000. So this is a very large dollar amount. We asked the company to give us a little breakdown of that and why there's a range. And what it really comes down to is the repairs of the facility were around $406,000. The loss of product was around $110,000. Some legal fees in there, that gets us to the $533,000, of which would be the low end. But in a case like this where you actually have product that hits the ground, there's ongoing discussion with the remediation plan that could cause another $92,000 to be spent by Senex to do the full remediation. So this is one of those cases where something did get damaged. We had product on the ground, so every case is significant. But this is one that, in my mind, is very significant because of the amount of product in the ground. The Senex has done a great job, I think, of fixing it and now working on the remediation plan. But it goes back to the biggest cause of pipeline failure is third-party damage, and this is the first one in my time where we've seen that. So staff also completed the investigation. It was not being made in emergency. Staff concluded that Gibb violated North Dakota Century Code by failing to provide an excavation notice at least 48 hours. Gibb and the commission have agreed to resolve this matter without further administrative proceeding and the attached consent order. So basically the consent order says that the commission orders Gibb to pay a fine of $6,000 payable to North Dakota Public Service Commission within 10 days of this order. A little more on the amount of product in the ground. 870 barrels of gasoline, CHS excavated the soil and sent to the appropriate landfill. So this is the first time we've dealt with this company. The fine is appropriate, I think very appropriate. And one of the things that I know that this is somewhat dated, but I know that staff worked back and forth with the company, and this was, I believe, set to go to hearing a couple different times. So I think Gibbons Son has basically said, okay, listen, we did this. We accept the fine of $6,000. I think that's very appropriate. But I will say, and this is outside the commission's jurisdiction, but this order today sets the stage for Senex to do whatever they think appropriate in the next phase, because there's a lot of money this thing costs. The damage to these facilities are at least $500,000, so that's separate jurisdiction. But the appreciate staff's work on this. I know Julie Prescott is working very hard on this.
Here we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I noticed that the consent agreement doesn't call for restitution, and is that because it's how did that change come about?
Commissioner, one of the things that, I've worked with staff over the, I guess, the last year or so is that in some of our orders, the companies would agree to pay for the damages. And also working with legal and the One Call Board, really by us giving this order out and finding them, that really sets the stage for the companies that want to go after the damages, they can do that. I think in this particular case, in some of them, we get to a point where the companies will not agree to pay the cost. So we have a separate jurisdictional question. Did they violate North Dakota One Call? Yes, they did. So the fine is $6,000 appropriate. The company would not agree to pay for the fines. So in this case, I think it was very appropriate that we set the stage. We issued the fine, and now that fine will serve as a basis for Senex's next decision. And I think that's probably the best way to say this.
And am I correct that actually the One Call Board actually encouraged us not to necessarily require that because it kind of was just dragging things out longer, and this gives them what they need to pursue it?
That's absolutely correct, Commissioner. When we met with the One Call Board, they even put that with, you know, about ways to improve the process. They said exactly what they want us to do is look at the information, make a decision, and they'll move forward with whatever is appropriate in the next step.
Okay, that's what I wanted highlighted. Thank you.
Brian, I wanted to ask one question about this. It's a detail that I didn't see in any of the reports, but do you happen to know how deep the pipeline was when it was struck? How far below the surface?
I do not have that in the documents in front of me, but I suspect that Julie Prescott could give us that depth.
Okay.
Maybe not
I'll
now.
Check
I'm sure
that.
She can find it.
Well, and the reason I bring that up is because I think I can't imagine why, if they knew this line was there, they weren't a little more careful in their excavation. But sometimes I think that companies assume that the pipelines are deeper than they are. And while, you know, that's something that's part of the permitting process, we know that pipelines tend to come to the surface over time or can, depending on freeze-thaw and all sorts of other factors that nobody can control. So really, this very much underscores the importance to take great care in identifying exactly where these lines are before you start digging along the entire route, because it's just there's just too much that can go wrong if we aren't really extremely careful.
Well, absolutely, Commissioner. And the One Call Law doesn't say you can dig without. There's not a depth requirement. If you're going to dig, you call before you dig. It's very easy to follow what the law says.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
Okay, thank you, Darrell. Item BK2. I move the Commission adopt the order on eligible telecommunication carrier designation, Dactel Communication LLC, designated eligible carrier application, case number PU15-119.
Second.
In March of this year, Dactel filed an application for designation as an eligible telecommunication carrier in limited service areas within North Dakota. Dactel is a competitive local exchange company seeking ETC designation for the purpose of receiving federal funding through the Federal Communication Carriers Rural Broadband Experiment Program. The Commission has set forth that by March 25, 2015, the Commission issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, providing until May 6th for comments and requests for hearing. No one requested a hearing. And basically, we've seen several of these broadband experiment requests come through. I know the Consolidated applied for one a while back that we approved. And the backdrop here is that in July of last year, the FCC adopted a docket and set forward provisions that the Connect America Fund to create a rural broadband experiment in high-cost price cap areas that basically helped them increase their speeds of download and upload, if you will. Dactel is, of course, a company doing business in North Dakota. They operate exclusively in North Dakota. They're requesting ETC designation in certain blocks in Stutsman County, and they're registered as an appropriate carrier. So I believe everything's in order, and I look forward to seeing how this broadband experiment program works out to see what Consolidated and potentially Dactel, what kind of services they're able to increase to some of the rural areas in North Dakota.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I just want to kind of expand on what you were just saying towards the end there. This is a neat project. And when consumers have on their cell bills or phone bills of the line for the federal tax, This is some of the ways in which that federal tax comes back to North Dakota to benefit customers. Looking at their application, this service that we provided, it's basically an extension of the service that the DACTEL is providing in Jamestown, but reaching out into rural and remote areas, up to 1 gigabyte speed out to some of these areas. So this is going to be a pretty impressive network for these rural areas and really stands to benefit those areas and upgrade their internet speeds and services out there. So I'm excited that these companies have applied for these projects and were accepted and will be seeing the benefits of these investments in rural North Dakota.
Is there any other further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK3. I move the commission deem the application complete, conditional on receiving final turbine locations and site plan at least 10 days prior to the hearing, and issue a notice of filing and notice of hearing in Rolette Wind Energy Project, Rolette County, siting application, case number PU15-124.
Second.
In March of this year, Rolette Power Development filed an application for certificate of site compatibility to construct a 100-megawatt Rolette Wind Project consisting of up to 59 turbine generators and associated facilities in Rolette, North Dakota. The project area, I'll explain here in a little bit, but the public hearing is scheduled to begin June 29, 2015 at 9:30 Central Time at Memorial Hall, 503 2nd Avenue, Rolette. And the issues that are considered, will, of course, this be needed? You know, I guess I won't go through all the issues that those are in there. The estimated cost of this project, approximately $175 million. And now to, I guess, explain the project area a little bit more precisely, following Commissioner Christman's lead, the project is, the north part of the project is southwest of Rolette, or you could say southeast of Overly, or you could say northwest of Wolford, or you could say northeast of Willow City. So for those of you that know central North Dakota, I've described the project area perfectly.
Thank you for that.
And we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 The motion is approved.
I will add just one thing I should have before is that we received very specific requests on these notices for wind farms, and it'll be interesting how as we get further into the changes that happen this legislative session about once we deem an area where if companies will continue to put in the amount of megawatts they want or if they'll just talk about the project area. That's one thing that I've thought about as we go into these next round of wind hearings when there's been changes to some of the laws in North Dakota. But for now, of course, when the company requests something and they put it in there, it seems very appropriate that we set those constraints that they've asked for. Item BK4. I move the commission publish notice of the 2015-2016 telecommunication relay service surcharge in the daily newspapers of general circulation in the state of North Dakota. Public Service Commission Telecommunications Relay Service, miscellaneous case number PU15-177.
Second.
In April of 1993, Governor Schaefer approved House Bill 1028 that established a program to provide specialized telecommunications services and equipment to the communication impaired. The relay service program is funded by an access line surcharge paid by the customers of the local exchange company. The relay services program is administered by ITD of the state of North Dakota. Before June of each year, the PSC calculates the amount of surcharge based on the cost data and other information provided by ITD. The commission has calculated the surcharge for this year to be 4 cents per access line per month. Look back at some of the numbers. The 4 cents has been in place since 2011, and in 2010 and 2009 it was 5 cents. So we've been holding pretty tight to the 4 cent amount. And of course, it's based on the number of lines divided by what they think the revenue requirement is and some of the appropriate documentation. They really try to keep those costs around 4 cents per line, and they've done a good job doing that the last several years.
Here we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Brian, do you happen to know if this covers cell phones too?
It does. They're considered in the numbers of access lines. So the number was 798,000, and the numbers we just got this year show the traditional landlines about 500 and some thousand, and cell lines 200, other way around, landlines 200 and some thousand, and cell 500 and some thousand. Let's see here. Yeah, the landlines, wireless 536, which is your cells, wireline 261. So yeah, absolutely, it does include the wireless lines. And that's why I think the number is held, because we're seeing a drop in wirelines traditionally, but we're still seeing an increase in the wireless. So the number is held pretty tight over the last few years. And I believe we've talked to Stacey a little bit. We'll put out a press release probably next week about the actual numbers, but we wanted to get this motion for this meeting.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, thank you, Darrell. Item BK5. Believing that there will be no prejudice to the rights of the parties or the public interest, and finding the cases involve similar questions of law and fact, I move the Commission consolidate under North Dakota Administration Code Section 6902.0404 and issue a notice of consolidated hearing in Northern State Power Company's 200-megawatt Courtenay Wind Farm Public Convenience and Necessity, case number PU15175, Northern State Power Company's Advanced Prudence 200-megawatt Courtenay Wind Farm application, case number PU15181, and Northern State Power Company's Discontinued Prudence Courtenay Wind Farm power purchase application, case number PU15183. And I further move the Commission assess a filing fee of $170,000 in case number PU15175.
Second.
Okay, this one, I will do my best to walk this through without taking up too much time. In April of this year, NSP filed an application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity for the 200-megawatt Courtenay Wind Farm. In May of this year, the NSP filed an application for an advanced determination of prudence for the proposed Courtenay Resource Addition. And also in May of this year, just Monday, I believe, NSP filed an application to discontinue the advanced determination of prudence previously granted by the Commission in case number PU13706 for a power purchase for the Courtenay Wind Farm. PU13706 was the rate case that the power purchase agreement for the Courtenay Wind Farm was part of. That was a very long and long rate case. There were some good outcomes that came out of it. But I guess when we set this up, I'll just give my 2 cents worth, is that really we had a case where we had a rate case where it was a settlement agreement that we came out of it with, and a part of that settlement agreement was that we agreed that Xcel could do the power purchase agreement from the Courtenay Wind Farm to buy the power at the rate that we felt was the rate they had negotiated and we felt it was appropriate. It was part of, in my opinion, a larger settlement agreement. So they already have an ADP to buy the power from the Courtenay Wind Farm. That was out there. So then we received a request that they now want to own the wind farm, which that's fine, but there's a process now that I think we have to make sure we go through very carefully, where the Commission has already given them advanced determination of prudence to buy the power in the rate case, and that's one of the provisions in that settlement agreement. And so now they no longer want to buy the power, so they have to request from us to back out of that what they've already agreed to, and we've issued the order. And now they would like to own the resource. So that's why this was far too complex just to do an informal. So I requested, as a portfolio holder, we just schedule a public hearing on that. So the date for the public hearing has not been set. We'll do that in scheduling. But, the issues that we're going to look at is basically, is it prudent for Xcel to own the facility instead of buy the power? Do they need it and follow the ADP on it? There's certain things in North Dakota state law that, rebuttable presumption if you own a facility in North Dakota. So those things I think will make it easier for Xcel to perhaps get the what they're looking for. But I think one of the issues that we'll flush out quickly is, do they need this power and how is it different from when we were in the middle of the rate case? Because I remember asking the question in the rate case, well, why don't you just own the facility? And the company's answer back was, well, it's a better deal to buy the power. So one of the key issues that I'll be looking at is what's changed. So I think it's very appropriate, and we continue to work diligently with Xcel on a lot of fronts. And as Commissioner Fedorchak pointed out, we just had the solar hearing, and now this will be set up. So I think that's the backdrop of differing state policies is one of the things that I'll be highlighting in my testimony tomorrow. So in this order, everything is in this case, everything is order, and I look forward to scheduling the hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Darrell. We're getting close to being done here. Item BK6. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Northern State Power Company's Courtney Wynn transfer of site certificate siting application case number PU15-174.
Second.
In November of 2013, the commission issued a certificate of site compatibility to Courtney Wind Farm LLC authorizing construction of a 200-megawatt Courtney Wind Farm in Stutsman County. In April of this year, we received a request from NSP, a Northern State Power Company, to file an application for a transfer of certificate number 36 from the Courtney Wind. The issues to be considered in this case are whether NSP agrees and is able to comply with the terms and conditions of the permit for construction issued to Courtney Wind. Comment and request for hearing must be received by June 30th, 2015. So this is really an extension of the previous order, but it's a little more focused. Courtney has a approved certificate to build. Xcel would like to transfer that for that certificate to them. And so this case, I did not think a hearing was needed. The site transfers, I think, are relatively straightforward as long as the company agrees to do the things that the previous company has. We could perhaps cover that informal. If one of my colleagues wants a formal hearing, we certainly will do that, or if anyone requests it. But I guess for me personally, that this site transfer, we probably want to put that hearing after the other one, but we'll see how that all plays out.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Well, my only question is, and I don't know if this is more appropriate for the scheduling part or at this point, but since we're going to be scheduling a hearing for the previous agenda item, those three cases, and issuing a notice of opportunity for hearing on this case, is there logic or would it be beneficial to, on the same day as we schedule the hearing on the other three cases, to reserve some time and just schedule this hearing, and then if no one requests it, we can cancel it, but if someone requests a hearing, we don't have to wait through the whole notice process. We could hold it on the same day.
Well, Commissioner, I guess that's certainly something we could talk about. If you're saying that you would like a hearing on this, then we could go forward with scheduling hearing.
No, I'm not asking for a hearing on it. I'm just saying in case someone else does, do we want to go ahead and have it noticed so it would be on the same day? Or maybe it's not a big deal to have it on a different day and bring everybody in. Or maybe there's almost no chance that anyone will ask. So I just threw it out as a possibility.
I think it's something we can certainly talk about, but I guess my thought would be that the previous hearing covering those three cases, that's going to be a full day or two. So I guess I'd prefer to keep them separate because there's really no way to control the time frames as we get into these hearings. It might be better just to do a separate day for it. That way we don't try to feel rushed in the earlier hearings.
Okay.
Is there further discussion? Since you're none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK7. I move the commission grant applicants' request for continuance and continue indefinitely the hearing that was scheduled for May 18, 2015 in Dickinson Wind LLC, 150-megawatt wind energy center, Stark County siting application, case number PU15111, and Dickinson Wind LLC, 230 kV transmission line, Stark County siting application, case number PU15-133.
Second.
The information I guess I would pass along here is just the information that we received from the company. On this Monday, we received a request from Dickinson Wind LLC that requested a continuance, and within 30 days, they'll let us know whether they want to schedule, what date they might want to reschedule, and then we'll go from there. So their request is to continue until a later date pursuant to North Dakota law. Dickinson Wind will provide an update on these projects to the commission within the 30 days. I think this is very appropriate to honor their request. All I could offer is speculation as to why they did this. I don't think I will do that, other than the fact that I think people are out there can follow what's been going on in the at the county level on some of this. From my viewpoint, they've requested a continuance. We'll grant it to them, and we'll let the company get back to us with what they want to do next.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Daryl, I just wanted to highlight, too, and I think that the motion does that, but I want to make sure we highlight to the folks out there that the company requested a continuance. The PSC did not advocate this because I did receive lots of inquiries that the commission shouldn't hold this hearing based on things that had happened. And my answer back to those folks was, well, we'll follow the lead of the company. If they want the hearing, we'll have it. If not, we won't. So the company requested a continuance, and I think it's very appropriate to grant it.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, and finally, item BK8. I move the commission find the complaint states a prima facie case, and the commission served the complaint on the respondent in Capital Electric Cooperative, Inc. versus Montana Dakota Utilities Company complaint, case number PU15-110.
Second.
One of the things that if we could make a note on this, Daryl, that I'd like to talk about this in scheduling. Maybe the three of us can visit about this complaint. But what we have is Capital Electric has filed a complaint against Montana Dakota Utilities. This order today states a prima facie case, and of course this will be served to MDU. But there's a backstory here. The complaint talks about that MDU is in the process of constructing an extension to serve a railroad hut and railroad signal. And this is very close to the Menards plant that currently the commission went through. Commissioner Fedorchak, actually, when I were over in Mandan on Monday listening to the appeal of our order in that particular case. So this is, I think, quite honestly, an extension of that discussion. So that's why I think today basically sets a case that MDU will be served on Capital's complaint. But I would like to talk to my colleagues about how we should deal with this. I mean, there's a process we'll deal with this, but it's obvious to my opinion, I believe, that this is clearly related to the previous case and how what's best to deal with these two. So, but everything's in order today for to serve the prima facie case.
Yeah, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just to add to that, Brian, I was a little bit confused by this one because there have been two requests for service out in that area. One of them is actually on the Menards site where we had the decision to provide the PCNN to MDU, and the other one is near the site. The second one that's near it, they have decided, both MDU and Capital have decided to wait until the PCNN issue is sorted out. This one that's on the site, MDU had gone forward without a PCNN, assuming that they had already received it via the PCNN we issued for the Menards site. So the question becomes, does the PCNN that we issued cover the geographical location of the site or just the customer, Menards? And so I think that this is going to, apparently there's quite a history of very similar disagreements occurring, and this is how we work through them. So I look forward to continuing this discussion of electric service out in that area of our community.
Well, Commissioner, I appreciate your adding some details around that. I guess that's why I wanted to get the three of us together in a work session to talk about some of these general challenges. But I will reinforce to what I said at the end of our previous hearing that the Capital Electric and MDU have a lot of touch points. And I understand there's a process that we need to get involved when requested, but I would strongly urge both of these companies to get into a room and figure out how they're going to serve the people of North Dakota. Because I don't think the people of North Dakota are best served by the PSC determining every little spot throughout their entire service area. I understand there's a process that we'll follow it, but I take that to both of the companies, which I hope are listening.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Daryl. That concludes my portfolio.
Okay. Well, before we get to Q&A, I just want to point out a couple things coming up. Tomorrow, we have a formal hearing to discuss the public convenience and necessity and ADP requested by MDU for the Thunder Spirit Wind Project. Which is kind of similar to the Courtney one where the company was going to buy a PPA and now they're going to buy the whole project. And so we have that hearing tomorrow. And then the wind hearing that we had originally scheduled for next Monday in Dickinson has been postponed indefinitely, so that comes off our calendar. And then on Tuesday, we have an annual meeting with railroads and stakeholders. This is a second annual, we'll call it. Apparently, there was a long history of the commission having annual meetings with railroads and stakeholders dating back, I'm not sure how long, but before our time and I think before your time on the commission even, Brian. But so we're reinstating that tradition. I think it's a really good opportunity for all of us to be in the same room, talk about what the railroad's plans are for the upcoming season and where we have a lot of competition between the various users of the rail system in North Dakota, just to get everyone visiting ahead of time about any additional plans that the railroads have for meeting all the needs, to talk about safety. And we expanded it a bit this year to include some additional stakeholders in communities. We've asked the Association of Counties, the League of Cities, and state's attorneys to also come if they so choose and see value in this discussion to really talk through with the railroads some of the issues they're having regarding blocked crossings and safety of crossings. So I think it'll be a good discussion. We've carved out most of the day for it and have an agenda, and the public is invited to attend as well. It'll be up here in the commission meeting room and look forward to a really thorough discussion of some of these important issues before the season gets going in full. And then we have later on this month, we have a formal hearings. The formal hearings kick off for Dakota Access Pipeline, which starts in Mandan on May 28th, and then we have later in June a couple more of those hearings scheduled. So that's really kind of the highlights of the next few weeks of the commission calendar. And with that, I will invite, we have two media here, Brian, Dave, and Mike are both here. So if you guys have any questions, we're ready to answer them.
One clarification question about the Robert Gibbons Sons. Where did that happen again?
Sure, Dave. It happened in, let me give you the exact location. Near the city of Arnegard, 25th Street and 139th Avenue.
And
the,
I'm sorry.
I just say with Gibbons Son was installing a water line at that address.
Was there any environmental damage?
Well, I assume so, Dave, because that's one of the things in the differences in price for $530,000 to $613,000 is when you broke out the cost. There was about a $12,000 cost that was incurred right away when the company, basically took the soil up and then brought it to landfill. And the big variable right now, they must be working with the health department or others, because there's that difference in cost of what the damages is, roughly $90,000, if they're going to require additional groundwater monitoring. So the way it stands right now is that the company believes that they've picked up all the product in the soil and disposed of that soil, and I think they're waiting to see if the additional groundwater monitoring is required. So I do not believe there is any damages, because they picked up the product and they've not yet required the groundwater monitoring. And so I think that's part of the discussion that's going on. And that's just my speculation based on the information I've picked up, and I guess my background in working with the Marine Corps and these kind of things is you pick up the product, you dispose of it, and most of the product gets absorbed by the first few feet of soil. Then you get down to a certain depth where it's clean, and then you stop excavation. But they may be required to do groundwater monitoring.
Can you describe, was this like on farmland, or was what type of land did this occur over?
I don't know if Julie Prescott is out there. I can't give you any more details than that address, Mike, from the paperwork I brought with me.
Do we have that in our files, Julie? Okay. We'll dig out whatever information we have, and we can talk to you guys after the meeting, provide more info. Any other questions?
Yeah, regarding the Dickinson Wind Project, I see that there's a group, the Concerned Citizens of Stark County, have filed a petition to intervene in that. Is that uncommon, and what is the process for that? When do you have to act on that and at some point approve that petition?
Mm-hmm. Brian, that's your case, so I'll let you, or your portfolio, so I'll let you talk about that if you would like.
Sure. Well, thank you, Mike. I mean, we're certainly aware of all the different groups that have formed, and they've called our office. We basically have told them to come to the hearing and say their piece. The intervention process, officially it's set up when we do rate cases. You know, I don't know necessarily that someone intervenes in a wind farm like this other than showing up to the hearing. I would have to ask our attorneys directly on that question, but my understanding for actual intervention is dealing with things like a rate case. If someone wants to intervene here, they basically come to the hearing. But I'd default to legal on the exact terminology on that.
Jack, do you have anything else to add on intervention?
Yeah, that sounds
correct.
Yep. I think, Mike, the way it would functionally play out is that, you know, so the group would come to the hearing and they would put all their information they want on the official record, and then we would make a decision. If they liked the decision, they probably wouldn't. They would accept it. If they didn't like the decision, then they would certainly request, you know, our decision be appealed somewhere, and so that's, they would preserve their standing by coming to the hearing and saying their piece. We've seen that in cases like the Julie talked about that CapEx line, the one that south of Fargo. We had citizens groups that were formed. You know, they came to the hearing and said their piece, and then after we made the decision, then they appealed it, and it worked its way through that process. But I think the way it's best served in these kind of cases is they come to the hearing, preserve their rights, and then we do issue the order, then they have better standing because they came to the hearing. And once again, speculation, but there's certainly a lot of back things going on here, and that's why I do appreciate the company requesting their continuance, because they clearly need to work all this out before they come to front of us, because we're going to ask all these kind of questions. Mm-hmm.
Can you recall this level of opposition to a wind farm in North Dakota in recent history, at least in your time on the commission?
Oh, absolutely, Mike. one of the first wind hearings that I was involved in was up in Carrington. There was some wind farms built in that area, and there was strong community opposition to that project, and there was strong community support to it. We actually, to date, is still the most contested hearing I've been part of. We had neighbors hollering at neighbors, and we had to kind of calm the place down. And, you know, it just stems from, you have those that benefit directly from the turbine locations get some monetary amount, and those that are looking at it, you know, they maybe don't like it. I would say that the commission, I think we've done a very good job of balancing these cases. When there's a case of potential harm that's come in front of us, ironically, the Courtenay Wind Farm, there was a crop duster that had an airfield adjacent to the wind farm. There was some of the turbines that we said in that site that we're not going to allow because it potentially threatened the safety of the airfield. So I think the commission does a great job of looking at all different issues, but there's really a lot of emotion that comes out in these wind farm hearings, especially when they're located within viewshed of towns and other types of areas.
And is there any, I mean, can this project go forward without county approval? I mean, if the PSC approves the permit, does that supersede the county's conditional use permit, or do you know?
Yeah, my understanding in cases like wind farms, that the commission does not have the authority or the jurisdiction to override a county decision. This is not like a power line where it's a whole different set of statute and law. So really, when you look at our orders in the past for wind farms, we'll put a lot of conditions on there, conditioned upon county final approval, conditioned upon perhaps state historical society approval. But once again, speculation, but it seems reasonable that the company knows that the commission doesn't have the authority or maybe even the desire to override a county. So I think that's one of the big reasons that they need to go back to the drawing board and make sure they've got a project that the county likes before they ever bring it to us.
Thank you.
Say, our general counsel now is in the room and wanted to see if Alana had any additional thoughts to add on the intervention status and whether that creates a different dynamic for people who intervene officially on a case like this.
I apologize. I didn't hear the original conversation because I was out because my computer was broken and I was trying to get it fixed so I could listen. But an intervener, if granted, would have a slightly different status than a member of the public. Member of public can always come and testify under oath. An intervener can cross-examine and would be served with pleadings and has a little bit different status. but also, of course, can testify under oath as well. Was there additional questions?
What's the standard that we follow for granting intervention status to somebody, a group of citizens like this?
I don't have that memorized, but it is stated in law and in our rules. And one of the items I do recall is that their interest is not adequately represented. They have some kind of an interest, and it's not adequately represented by someone else. So I just did read through the three filings on the pipeline, not on the wind farm, but I did notice them, each filing is addressing each one of those factors. Now, there will be an opportunity for the applicant to respond. And after that opportunity to respond, then the ALJ does have authority from previous delegation from the commission to make those decisions. However, they can also be brought up to the commission either by the ALJ or either party.
So that it could be the ALJ that decides, or we could be asked to decide and determine whether somebody's granted the intervention.
Correct.
Intervenor status.
Yeah, and I will say whether or not you're an intervener does not guarantee that you do or do not have standing to appeal. That's a different standard.
Right.
It's simply to have a little more formal position in the proceeding.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I hope that answered your questions.
I think it did.
Alana, I kind of walked through that very, very similar to you said, but what we've seen, like in a rate case, we'll actually publish a notice of intervention deadline, and we haven't seen these perhaps in the wind farms, but we have seen to where practically it might play out to where a decision is reached, and since they came to the hearing and said their piece, they'll have a better standing if and when the order gets appealed. And so that's kind of the way it perhaps plays out. But the big thing, I think, is just to get the issues out there and make sure we're considering all the issues.
Yeah, I agree with what you said. I don't have anything different.
Any other questions?
Just another quick clarification. Has mining begun at Coyote Creek yet?
No.
No, construction, like of their shop and things like that, but not actual mining.
If I remember correctly, was it 2016 you want to start mining? Or
correct.
Anything else, Mike or Dave? Okay. We will take a break until maybe 11:30 and then reconvene for the admin portion of the meeting. Does that work for you, Brian?
Yeah, absolutely. If Jester just calls the same set of numbers, I'll be here.
Okay. We'll be back on live at 11:30.
All right. Thanks.